So we've been here for 2 weeks, you and I.
Yes, sir. This is our last day together, Danko.
We've been hanging out nonstop.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, as much as we could, because we've been in separate touring parties on our little adventure. So yeah. Every time we see each other in an airport, you know, in a washroom, wherever we do, we hang out.
And it's Australia Soundwave Festival, and we talked about this before the festival. You and I have to do podcasts.
Yes.
That's why I brought this big ass mic.
Yes,
and
everyone has commented on.
Including Jonah.
Who's sitting here from fucked up.
Right there.
Over there. Should we introduce ourselves at this point?
Yeah, it's the intro.
Okay.
Hey, Damien.
Hi. Hi, Danko. How you doing, buddy?
Are you doing an impression of me, too, like
no.
Flanagan?
No. Yeah.
That's Flanagan's latest
thing.
That's my
Flanagan impression. That's a pretty good Flanagan.
And you're kind of the Flanagan for these podcasts,
right? Oh, that's the most horrible
right?
thing someone's ever said to me. No, I'm just kidding.
I was going to say, I don't mean to insult you. No, but, you know, usually Nick's here and
yeah.
you are part of the Black Coffee Brigade. We have another member in the touring carnival here who's
Wade.
A member, Wade from
Wade.
Gallows. And you guys are about to do your last side wave show here.
Yep, tonight's the last side, and then tomorrow we bid adieu to you for a little bit, mm-hmm. to our new friends that we met on this tour, because it's our last Soundwave tomorrow.
Who have you met that you can now call your new friends?
Oh, well, I don't know how many of these people call me a friend, but Craig Sitari from Sick of It All. I've been hanging out with that dude. He's been busting my chops. He's kind of like a big brother in the sense that he picks on me all the time. Butch Vig, got to chill with Butch Vig. And I got to thank Butch Vig because when I was a kid, I went to CFMY, local radio station in Toronto. And they used to have, you know, bands do these interviews. And Garbage came down to do an interview. And this was like just when their first single had come out. So I was putting my head into punk rock and becoming a punk rock kid. But like, I'm like, oh, this guy produced the Nirvana record and that Queers of the Queer song was super sick. So my brother and I went down, we talked to him and they gave us like free tickets to the show, gave us like records, just were so nice to us. And like, you know, you and me both being in bands now, it's awesome when people come up and talk to you, but like, you don't have a lot in common with like a 14-year-old kid as an adult. And the fact that they like, you know, as a big rock band sat down and hung out with a bunch of like 14 and 15-year-olds and like just, you know, chilled with us and asked about music and talked to us about music was like a huge thing for me. So I got to go up to Butch Vig and be like, thank you for that. Cause it changed the way I view musicians and bands and fans. And it was really a big moment for me.
So did he get you a VIP pass for side stage when they play?
No, he didn't give me any passes. But he did give me his email address.
Oh, that's so, a heavy score.
Yep, so we're friends. Now, actually, I've learned, though, everyone gives you the email address. It's if they write back. That is the key.
Yeah, that's true. Very true.
Dave Grohl.
Really?
Yeah. He's busy, you know. Like I'm.
I think he's got a couple of people emailing him, too.
He's got a couple irons in the fire, and, like, you know, I really don't. I'm not mad at him that he didn't write back to me about my, have you heard of the band Factory from D.C. from 1986? I think you'll totally like them if you remember.
Is that what you wrote them?
Yeah, 9535. And like it was all these bands that he loved
doing
like a New York Dolls type thing. And I wrote him this thing about it. And maybe he checked it out and he just forgot to write me back.
For me, I scored an email address. So far, my only one, but it's Lou from Sick of It All.
Well, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, pretty heavy.
That's pretty wicked.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy, man.
That's like that's the thing. You got to collect the email addresses.
It's the
addresses.
New thing.
Yeah, it's like.
And I played it real cool in front of them. Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
And then I've been chatting every chance I get with Mike Dean.
Yeah. From COC.
COC, and now he's...
Caius Lives?
He's subbing in. From what I've heard, he's subbing in for Caius Lives right now.
It's kind of like, if you're going to have to get a sub for Caius, it's like Mike Dean from COC is pretty high up on the list.
Yeah, the best sub you can possibly get.
And I will say, I talked to him briefly outside of your hotel the other day, and that dude is awesome. Like,
yeah.
Talking about old punk, old hardcore, talking to him about American politics. He just seems like just like the coolest, chillest dude.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as manic as he appears on stage.
We talked about Mexican food and our aborted slot on an old COC tour.
Oh, you guys were supposed to play with COC?
Yes. We were supposed to tour with COC, Fu Manchu, and Alabama Thunder Pussy in 2005.
That's like the best tour ever. ever.
Yeah.
And, oh my God.
And there's some, you know, there's some wringlings and wranglings, and the last minute it didn't happen for us.
I don't think that tour, did that tour have you?
The tour happened, and he actually came to Toronto, and Mike actually apologized. And it wasn't his fault either. And I didn't, never held it against him, but it was nice.
Wow, that's awesome.
To hear that,
that is the one thing, like, you know, like there's definitely some bummers, but like the best thing about being on this tour is that you and me are talking. We're like nerds about music, and this is where you get to meet your heroes.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
These moments are times when you're like, do I ask for the autograph?
Yeah, exactly.
Do I ask for the photo?
Well,
I don't know.
As we're talking now,
trying to be cool, you know.
When we're talking now, it sounds like we're name dropping, but you got to understand, we're nerds. Like this is awesome.
We are not name dropping.
No,
name dropping is if
my friend.
Yeah,
my friend, my homie.
No, dude, I scored the guy's email.
Yeah, we're bragging about being fans here.
Yeah,
you know, and like
bragging about being fans,
bragging about being nerds about music and meeting these people. But that's what that's been the best thing about this tour. Like, you know, like turning around and being like, oh shit, you were in that band that had a huge influence on me, or like, you were in that band that, I love that old band, like Johnny, who works for Slayer, played in Bloodcum.
I met him.
I want to meet him.
I met him side stage Metallica.
Oh,
and I did the same thing.
Bloodcum?
I went up to him and I go, excuse me. And he's wearing he's all decked out in Slayer, and I go, are you in Bloodcum? And he goes, yeah. And I go, I have your album. And he goes, the white one? And I was like, no, it's not. No, no. And he goes, the Black EP? And I go, yeah. I didn't know it was called the Black EP, but I was like, yes, the EP, I have that.
You should come over and listen to the white one sometime.
Yeah.
What's the song, Jonah?
Death by Coat Hanger.
Death by Coat Hanger.
Hashtagging the word Bloodcum.
Really?
That's cool.
Jonah's live blogging. He's live blogging the intro, live tweeting the intro.
This is big for me, too. I'm like a guy who would probably be using the phone.
Now, Jonah's not going to pick up on the microphone, but Jonah's just saying that he's the biggest fan in the world of the two people in the room with him right now. Thanks, Jonah.
Yeah, man.
One day, maybe we can take
it. I appreciate it, man.
We're going to get escorted out police like some of the big bands on this tour do when they get off the plane. Yo, today you missed the craziest pop I've heard. For you kids at home, Australia's the craziest place for air travel because you do not need a ticket to get anywhere in that airport. Like, you can pretty much fly the plane without a ticket. And so there's kids, when you get off the plane, waiting for you. And it's like Beatlemania for the AP set, kind of every day we get off these planes. Not for us, but there's these bands on this tour that are like very attractive young men who are covered in tattoos. And Leo, I'm not talking shit. These are cool. I've talked to a lot of these dudes too, and they're super nice guys. But there are girls every, and some young men too, but mainly girls, young girls, waiting for them when they get off the plane. And today we were on with Pierce the Veil. And I could hear, I'm like right behind them as we're walking up the plank, and there's an automatic door, and I can hear girls screaming in anticipation of that door opening, and the door opens, they run forward and start grabbing at them and everything. It was like, oh my gosh.
That's crazy.
This is what, like, you know, here I am trying to hang out and talk to Butch Vig about Mech Mench, and meanwhile these guys are getting mauled by groups of teenagers.
We had to do a autograph session, and they were sectioned out. Each band had a table, and each band had their own lineup.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pierce the Veil had this huge-ass lineup with all these girls waiting for him.
Yeah,
and we had just a little group of guys with a Rush T-shirt and a Danzig T-shirt, and I knew that was our line.
Nothing will beat we never do signings. Like, we haven't done one signing on this trip. Like, if anyone wants an autograph, you come find me. I'll sign anything for you. I will talk to you. Like, you know, but the reason we don't is because we played this festival in England, and we did a signing, big corporate branded signing, and we get there and there's this huge lineup of kids, and there's like this big long gate to get to the signing table, and they're keeping the kids back from this thing, and we're like, oh my god, we are huge, we are fucking huge. So we sit down at the table and we're like, okay, send them in, get ready guys. And then the lineup doesn't move, just like three people go, and we're watching them, and they have to snake their way up this thing, and it takes like 2 minutes of them snaking their way up this thing, and we're like, oh, and they're like, oh, taking back Sunday's signing after you. Like, oh, that's why we don't really do these signings, unless it's in Japan. In Japan, and actually English festivals in like Leeds and Reading, we've had fun at signings. But for the most part, it's normally just like, it seems like it's more trouble than it's worth to make someone line up for my autograph than me just come up and get it.
Yeah, no, it's true. We do it just because, I mean, I don't know.
Well, I
they
can see
tell me to, they point and I walk over there, and it's humbling sometimes.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Believe me, it is for us. It's always humbling. That's why we don't do it. But that being said, like you do, you know, I enjoy the like. I think you have a very different live show than I do. I'm off the stage and get to just talk to people after the show. So it's not like I really need that moment where we can like sit down at a table and they can come up to me. If they want to talk to me, come watch the show and I will be in the audience after the show.
You will meet Damien.
You can meet me after the show. I will talk and talk and talk until you tell me to shut the fuck up.
And well, this is supposed to be an intro to the podcast.
I know, there's so many stuff we could talk about.
I know. We could turn this intro into a whole podcast.
Yeah.
But the reason why we're here is to intro this podcast, the guest on this podcast, very near and dear to you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And when it was announced that we were going to be playing with them, you reached out to me through Twitter and you said, I am there. And then I realized, wait a minute, this guy and Damien, perfect podcast. And I knew you wanted an excuse to talk to him too.
You have been kind of my dream weaver of sorts on this thing. Like you've gotten me some cool nerd out moments with we'll save the other
one. Yeah, there's another
podcast
one coming too.
But for this one should I say his name now?
Yeah.
Chris Jericho from Fozzy. But also for me, until this tour, I've seen Fozzy in a great band, but Chris Jericho, the wrestler's wrestler, like one, you know, it's debatable if he's the best wrestler in the world or the best wrestler of all time, but he's certainly on that list of the greats of all time and a Hall of Fame wrestler.
He's a Hall of Famer.
And he is, and also, like, it turns out, a pretty cool dude to talk to, you know, like it's...
As you will see.
Yeah, as you will see. And
although we should preface, before anybody hears this, you have to understand where we were when we recorded this with Chris Jericho and what was going on. This was backstage.
At backstage, as Duff was on stage getting ready to start playing, so you could hear they're playing upstairs. We found a little hobble in the university that you guys were playing, University of Sydney, I believe it was.
Yeah.
And it was like a little storage
at
closet.
At the Manning Bar.
At the Manning Bar. A little storage closet downstairs by the green room where we just set up this very mic and all huddled around a table.
And there was people in the room on the other side trying to be quiet for our sake.
Yeah.
But, you know, you people
it's
come
a backstage
in.
It's
a backstage
show. People have been drinking.
And we have one mic here because I'm traveling, we're on the road. And so when you listen to this, please understand that audio quality is not the best.
Yeah, it is, but also at the same time, if this is very reflective of what it's like to be on. And I think it suits what we're talking about because we're talking to him about the transition from being a superstar in pro wrestling to being a dude in a band paying his dues and kind of making himself in music. And like, regardless of what you think of Chris Jericho's music, he made his music. Like, he made himself as a musician. He never really traded on being a wrestler or anything like that. He did his band and now he's in a position where he's rubbing shoulders with his idols. And you know, I think hopefully that all comes across in this thing.
Yeah. So, without further ado, let's check it out. And you,
Y2J, Y2J.
You really nerded out here as a wrestling fan. I'm a wrestling fan from like back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
And when I say back in the day, I'm talking Von Erichs, Crusher Blackwell, Hogan,
superstar,
Great Kabuki, Bruiser Brody, Abdullah the Butcher. And then even all the way till like Stone Cold and The Rock, I like all that stuff. And I know Chris is. I've seen him wrestle Shawn Michaels, Undertaker, all that stuff. I know that stuff. But I love all that, you know, Piper Valentine feud, all that stuff.
Absolutely. And I think Chris Jericho, he has that kind of promo ability, but he also has something that none of those guys really had. Like some of the guys in the AWA and the NWA had it, but like he's an amazing athlete, an amazing worker, you know, and he really puts on a show and has done so in Japan, done so in Mexico, done so in Calgary. You know, he's been through all the proving grounds at a time when they were still proving grounds. Now I think they're, you know, I haven't been there, but I think they're a little easier than they used to be. And he did it, and he paid his dues, and he's always been told in wrestling, you know, he was too small or didn't have the right look for what they were doing, and he proved that he was the best at what he did and got himself popular himself. And that's kind of what he's doing in music too, you know? Like I think you'd be hard pressed to find someone that was like, oh, this dude's got a metal band, I'm buying in right away. And he's worked it up, so now he's Metallica's watching him, you know? Like, yeah. That's what he did himself, you know, and that's a very admirable thing.
He was very nice to us.
Very nice to us. And he didn't have a shirt on, too. Except he also got really pissed at me about that smile in the photos afterwards,
yeah.
Eh?
Yeah.
I did a goofy smile in some photos. He got really mad. I thought he was going to slap the walls of Jericho.
Maybe because I threw you under the bus. I started laughing because I couldn't help it. It was hilarious. I've already told that story to half a dozen people. But Damien makes this hilarious face right at the last minute when I snapped the photo with Jericho and Damien. And, you know, from Chris's vantage point, he didn't know what was going on. He just saw a bunch of people laughing. But, you know, that's Damien's signature look.
It's my signature smile. He didn't know. He's not a fan, I guess.
Well, here you go. Here is the great Chris Jericho.
Y2J, Y2J, Y2J.
So there's three Canadians in Australia. I got Damien Abraham, and I have myself, Danko, and we have our guest here for this episode, Mr. Chris Jericho.
And I was saying, like, it's crazy, because I met you, Chris, the other day, and I'm, like, a huge Mark nerd wrestling fan. I met Duff, and, you know, being a huge fan of Guns N' Roses, growing up with him, totally chill. Talk to him, no problem. You are shaking like a leaf, what I met. And it's, like, it's so weird, because, like, anyone in music, I'm fine with, but...
But people, I mean, people have different levels of who they like or get that attitude
absolutely.
From. Like, I've had three people in my life that just flipped me out when I met them. Actually, four, and none of them are wrestling guys because you know I'm in wrestling. I just and like the first time I worked in WCW, and like I was in a dressing room, like Hogan is in there and Flair is in there and Sting, all these guys. I had to take a second of just going like, oh my gosh, but I'm here. Now it's my job to steal these guys' jobs.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same with being, you know, in Fozzy. It's like when we meet these guys, like I just flipped out. We just had a band meeting after our set because Duff came and was like, dude, you guys are great. I didn't know what to expect. And, you know, I didn't know what it was going to be like. You guys are a great band. I was really impressed. I was like, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Duff McKagan. Still, when you hear something like that, I mean, if anybody says it's cool, but like a guy like that, I mean, that's a freaking, you know.
It's pretty heavy.
So the four guys was Ozzy, Hetfield. Hetfield was bad because that was always like you know growing up that was the guy that I could really.
That was your one.
Yeah, but now like me and James are buds.
You know. I saw you guys chatting at the barbecue.
Yeah, and at the barbecue, and then we were watching Slayer together, and it's you know, and then
no big deal.
And that was
no
funny.
Big deal.
Exactly.
Big Jim.
Yeah, no whatevs, you know.
No big deal.
And then Gretzky.
Oh, that's heavy.
Flipped
man.
Me
that's
out.
Heavy
man.
For everybody.
I was so nervous.
So you're my Gretzky because I don't like hockey. I don't like sports. I love sports in wrestling and MMA, but a little MMA. But wrestling's my sport. That's it. So like, but I know what you're saying.
Gretzky's like
he transcends.
Like, he transcends.
He's a icon. National treasure. Yeah.
Exactly right. And then George Lucas was the other one.
Whoa!
See, not for anybody of our
heavy.
Generation.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty heavy.
Star Wars. It's like
no. Yeah, man. Sense. You know, but that's why like whenever. And I'm not saying this in an egotistical way in any way, shape, or form, but whenever I meet somebody that's very touched by meeting me, shaking, scared, I met some guy on the street in Sydney that I could hear him screaming after we took a picture as I was walking. Like,
that's awesome. That's an awesome feeling.
It is, and it's like I understand because that's how I still am.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if Paul McCartney walked in here right now, or Ringo, or two of the remaining Beatles, I would flip out and like, That's what I was like with James or Ozzy, all these guys. So
yeah.
When you get that vibe, it's the best feeling in the world because you know that like you've put your life into your work, mm-hmm. and you've done all these things and all the stuff you have to go through. As you guys know, being in a band, it's the same. Show business is show business. That when people respect your work and believe it enough where it's like, I'm so nervous to meet you. It's like, I get it, mm-hmm. and I appreciate it, and it'll never go, oh, what a nerd. I mean, I don't use the word nerd.
I kind of embrace it. I think you've owned something. Because I was called a nerd as a kid.
Yeah, yeah, but now the nerd's going to take over
the
planet.
Yeah, exactly. And if you own it, it becomes like, you know, not to say like, you know, a racial slur or a homophobic slur. That might be something different, but it's like a nerd thing. I feel like fat dude. I was called fat dude my life. I own that shit now. I'm a fat motherfucker. Proud of it.
You know, in our conversations, I've never, ever taken the bait whenever you said that about yourself or described it.
What? Never, I'm a nerd?
No, I never laugh at your fat jokes about yourself.
I don't laugh at your fat.
I will, on the other hand, well, call you fat.
Yeah, but like, oh, they
Chris
can't
doing
see
it?
Me right
okay,
now.
Oh, I'll start laughing.
Tell them that I've got better muscles than you do. They can't see us.
See, that's a radio right now. Yeah. All of us are sitting here without pants, by the way, right now. But yeah, I was always, like, I had a lot of friends, like a lot of guys, like Hugh Morris,
yeah.
WB.
Yeah.
He'd go home and say, I'm just a fat guy. Hey, Chubby, what's up, Fatso? Hey, Chubby.
Yeah, yeah.
It's fun. You know, it's like, hey, dude. If you get the right guy.
Well, they can't hurt you.
Well, because you're friends.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
But, like, was there anyone in wrestling that you didn't get to meet that you would have liked to meet? Maybe someone that passed away before or something?
Because we mentioned Maple Leaf Wrestling and Billy Red Lions before.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's, like, real classic wrestling. I saw, like, the Great Kabuki and Jimmy Valiant feuds play out in there. Like,
yeah.
Have you met any of those people from that era? Did that... Did you get starstruck?
Well, my thing is that, like, I came up... just so you know why I'm even here is I when I was a kid I wanted to be in a rock and roll band and I wanted to be a wrestler. Mm-hmm. Those are my two dreams. And I didn't know the difference, like, you know, well, you can't do this or can't do that. Like, I didn't even think of it that way. It's just like, these are like, I like pizza and I like chicken. I'm going to have a bite of each because I'm hungry. I never looked at it like, oh, this is going to be a big thing. Or I never looked at it like, well, if you do this, then people are going to look down you. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't care about anything other than that I just wanted to do this with my whole being, you know? So when I started watching wrestling, I was really into it, but in Winnipeg, we had Maple Leaf Wrestling, but that was basically WWF.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we started getting Maple Leaf Wrestling, it was when WWF had already taken over. So it would just be like another WWF show.
Right.
What I watched... was the AWA, which was out of Minneapolis. Because in Winnipeg, that's
so you
what
watched
we got.
Nick Bockwinkle and all that stuff?
And if you look at my character in 2008 when I wore the suits and used big words and talked very slowly, that was a combination of Nick Bockwinkle and Javier Bardem's character in No Country for Old Men.
Oh, okay.
He played Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, yeah. I heard that about, slowly, but I never heard about Nick Bockwinkle. That makes a lot
Bockwinkle
of sense. Well,
Bockwinkle was totally suits.
Bockwinkle,
and big words. And nobody,
classy dude.
As weird as it is, in 08. Nobody was doing that. Now everyone wears suits, talks slowly, but I'm not saying I created it.
But you referenced him. They're not referencing him.
Well, they're not because they're basically referencing me, but they're not knowing where it came from. And that came from Nick Bockwinkle.
But also, like, it's because you did it in a different way than Nick Bockwinkle did it.
Well, and that was also after, you know, 18 years of being in the business.
Yeah,
18
exactly.
years of experience, you know?
Which brings up a really good point because you're a guy now who, you know, you're talking about hanging out with Ozzy, talking about hanging out with James. You earned this. You didn't get handed rock and roll. Like,
never.
You earned that shit.
I was working in a warehouse, a CD warehouse, in 2000. I unpacked Fozzy CDs.
Yeah.
I put it up. And I was like, this. I saw the font, and I was like, this looks kind of metal.
Yeah.
I turned it over, and I was like, no shit.
Yeah. No, because it was like, you know, I'm sure for a lot of times people were like, oh, the joke metal band that you're in. And it's
What happened was, how it started is, like, there's almost two versions of our band. Like, there's two versions of Pantera.
Yeah.
Like, the original Pantera
the
was
Pantera.
Kind of, right?
Yeah.
And when you think Pantera, there is this other side, but you don't... It started at Cowboys
Club
Chevelle, became the Pantera legendary. It's the same with us. Like, we started... Rich and I met, just kind of coincidental, kindred spirits, same bands that we liked. He was doing Stuck Mojo at the time, and then had this...
Oh, Stuck Mojo from Atlanta.
Yeah, all these guys are Stuck Mojo.
Really?
Yeah, Rich Ward and Frank Foncer, the drummer and guitar.
Okay.
That's crazy. Okay.
So that's where they came from, and we just had met, you know, backstage, and he said, listen, because I told him, you know, I'm a musician, and at the time I was looking to start a band again. And he's like, well, we got this band, this cover band called Fozzy Osbourne that we have in Atlanta. Whenever anybody's around, whoever's around, we come down and play. You should come jam with us sometime. So I sprained my ankle and I had like 2 or 3 months off, and I called him like, dude, let's do it. So we went down and played two shows, And then as a result, there was like a bidding war from record companies. Remember record companies? But those things
when
back
they had
in the
power.
Day? Yeah. And because of Rich from Stuck Mojo and Jericho from the WWE were in this band. And we got signed by this guy called Johnny Zazula.
Oh, shit.
Johnny Z.
Dude.
Signed Metallica and Anthrax. Yeah. Megaforce Records.
That's pretty heavy.
And he signed us. He's like, I want to sign.
It was on Megaforce, though, the first Fozzy thing.
Yeah, the first
It was
two,
on Megaforce?
The first two records were on Megaforce.
Holy shit.
Executive produced by Johnny Z. And we're like, listen, we're just did this for fun, covers. And he's like, I want to sign the cover band. And it was like really? Like, why? But for whatever reason, he just wanted to sign this cover band. And then so we kind of came with this backstory, like a Traveling Wilburys, Blues Brothers things where we all play, you know, had characters.
Yeah.
And it was like, all right, you know, whatever. He offered us a good amount of money and like any self-respecting musician, all right, let's take it and do what we can with it. So we had fun with it. But then after the second record is about 2 years in, it was like, listen, we like playing together. We'd written some originals at that point.
Mm-hmm.
We should just drop this whole backstory thing and just do our thing. And that's kind of what happened. So since 2003, 2002 even, it's been We Are Now.
Straight up.
Yeah, because we started at that, people still reference that.
Yeah.
As if we're still...
And it's like a different band now,
obviously. It's a complete... Well, it is. It's just that's how we started. Yeah. Every band started playing covers. We started playing covers that were recorded on a fairly well-known label. So it's taken us a while to kind of get past that. And then, of course, the big stick in the mud is, oh, it's the wrestler guy. Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is the wrestling band.
But the fact that you referenced Halloween as a...
Well, dude, I mean, the thing is, I'm no joke when it comes to that. Like, I've been playing a band since I was 12 and have been obsessed with music since I was 8. So, you know, I can go toe-to-toe with anybody talking about metal. And that's why, I think that's one of the reasons why people have like, over the last 3 years, the whole mindset about Fozzy's changed. Now we're a band.
Yeah.
You and you.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Now we're here.
Because people know the passion that I have. It's not a vanity project.
Yeah.
It's not something where, like... You know, I don't.
Well, because you ate shit doing this.
Well, like, and I still did. We had to work twice as hard
as any other band, absolutely,
to get to where we got to, because there was always this wrestling thing.
But you know what's funny? Because people don't. I'm going to drop some serious nerd science right now, and I know you hate that word, but wrestling and rock and roll have this like long history.
There is, but this, like, to me, it's like, okay, like, I, you know, if you like 30 Seconds to Mars, right? Big band.
Yeah.
Jared Leto. Oh my gosh, he's talented. He's an actor as well, and he's a damn good actor. I don't think people really think of 30 Seconds to Mars as the actor's band.
Well, I think they do.
Well, I don't think they do as much as they used to.
Oh, I think
because they've proved themselves.
And also, I think kids of a certain age don't, maybe. But I think, like, anyone that saw My So-Called Life is like, oh,
sure.
But then
they'll go play. Play almost arena.
We've played legit shows with them.
They were on Soundwave with us last time.
They're on Download this year, third from the top.
Yeah.
They are like they are gaining status as a real band.
So my point is like, okay, so and then this is finally not the wrestler's band. It's just a great rock and roll
band.
But
I think like I think
the guy happens to do something else.
I think what he did was had a lot easier time because what he did was, and I'm not, you know, I've met that dude. He's a nice dude. I'm not talking shit. But what he did was like, you know, that was the actor. That was a vanity project at first. So, you know, like my friend went on tour with him, and with you, it was like you had to work twice as hard as you said because it was like. It almost served as a counter.
But I also never had a problem. Listen, like, you know, I wrote about this in my second book. It's like I was at the top level in wrestling.
Yeah.
I remember one night we had did Madison Square Garden wrestling. Might have been in the main event. So for the sake of the story, I was in the main event of Madison Square Garden. Then after the show was done, went over to the Tribeca Rock Club and played in front of 100 people.
That's awesome.
You know,
man.
And it's like, to me, the passion was the same for both. Like,
yeah.
I get to play with my band in front of, you know, and it's like, that's what you, you know, I don't ever take money from this side to put it this side.
Yeah.
This is a legitimate business. Mm-hmm. It's a legitimate band that we're going to sink or swim with it.
Yeah.
And every year things have gotten better and better and better. Like, so just to be here, I mean, this tour is amazing.
It's crazy.
Well, because
Fozzy could do this.
Like, realistically, you could have at any time been like, fuck it, let's just play wrestling conventions and WrestleMania weekend.
And you can ask my manager. Every time that came up, it's like, absolutely,
and
not.
I've never seen you do that.
Never.
Talk about your first book being like eating shit and wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that prepared you to eat shit
yes.
in the music business?
And also too, knowing when you feel a vibe of something is building. Like if nobody cared about our band or bought the records or came to the shows or went nuts or enjoyed what we do or whatever, okay, fine, we tried, loved it. But in wrestling, like even when shit was going really bad, I still believed in myself, and you could suddenly feel, okay, it's building. sooner or later something's gonna happen.
Yeah, you can't fail if you can't don't fail. If you don't quit.
That's so. Right. And if you know, like, you know, like if I want to play center for the Leafs, it's probably not gonna happen.
Yeah.
Just not good enough at hockey for that. But with wrestling, I knew I could do it. With the band, I know I can do it. So you just got to believe in it. And if you believe in it and have the confidence and don't quit and just keep pounding away, people will respect that and they'll start joining the ride with you. And that's so for wrestling, to answer your question, I'd been through it before. I knew how hard it was to make it, but I also knew that when you can feel it and it's building, you got to stick with it. So it's been and then, but you could feel like I've been here before. So I know it works.
So when, like, in the book, you talk about the lowest point being, like, you're being told you're, like, the most overpaid wrestler in the company in the first book. What was there a moment like that?
Was that what you're talking about in WWE?
Yeah,
WWE. That was in my second book.
I
spent 9 years to get to the WWE, which was my dream.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I'd been a star all around the world, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Magazine, main event, whatever you want to say. And then when I got to WWE, it was, like, the first couple months, there was a nightmare. To where I did have that meeting with Vince, where he's like, you're not worth the contract, you're not worth the paper your contract is printed on. You're green as grass. I was sold a bill of goods. You're the drizzling shits. That was a good one.
Did you ever have that moment in music though?
Like
an equivalent moment where you're like, fuck. Because in the book you kind of talk about like being like pushed to the limit.
It's different in music because it's not all governed by one person.
Yeah.
You know,
and like, people are really forgiving too.
Yeah.
And also too, it's like, if you're going, like, who would be the Vince McMahon of the music business? Like a head
Pitchfork.
Of a record company or
Pitchfork, the website.
Oh. Blabbermouth.
Blabbermouth for metal, yeah.
But, you know what I mean? But it's like, you know, it's different in music because you have to impress
a lot.
Hundreds
yeah.
of people. But if you're good, it'll work.
Mm-hmm.
In wrestling, you could be the best guy in the company, but if Vince doesn't like you or thinks you're too small or too fat or too big or weird nose or whatever, he can put the fucking screws to you and finish you off. It's not like that in this world. If you're good, sooner or later people will come.
And you're like, and you've kind of become like the, you know, and I don't know, this like, total outsider fan point of view, but like a wrestler's wrestler and a wrestling fan's wrestler, you know, like,
well,
and you're kind of becoming that in music too. You're talking about James Hetfield and like these people, like Duff McKagan coming up and talking.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That's
yeah.
like a musician's musician, you know.
I think a lot of people, like, I know one thing, a friend of mine, do you know Brent Fitz? Canadian drummer, jams with Slash now, but he's been around for years and years.
Oh,
and years.
No, but
okay.
Was he in Age of Electric?
Yes.
That's a singer too. Was in
Todd Kearns.
Yeah.
Todd Kearns
yeah.
is in Slash. Yeah.
So
I was more impressed by him because I was a big Age of Electric.
Yeah. But the thing about it is, I can't remember what I was going to say. What my point was.
Was it something about Age of Electric? No, I'm just
no.
joking.
Whatever your question was before.
I'm just so enamored by the
yeah,
Age
well,
of Electric now.
Oh, wrestlers,
yeah,
wrestlers, whatever.
Wrestler,
I don't
yeah.
even know how Fitz, what I was going to say about Fitz, but
Age
thing,
of Electric
thing,
is like
musicians,
musicians,
too.
Musicians.
Yeah, I think I never really planned any of those things. I just did what I believed in doing, and I've always kind of never just thought of myself just as a wrestler. I've always kind of wanted to be. I'm an entertainer. I'm in show business. That's what wrestling is. I always wanted to be the Paul Stanley of wrestling.
Fuck yeah!
Like I wanted to be the rock star.
That's a great.
Wrestler.
Yeah, that's a great bridge right there.
Right. And so the thing is, so I came into wrestling with the Paul Stanley mindset.
Yeah.
So then when we started Fozzy, I took the same things I do with wrestling that I took from Paul Stanley. It's all about entertainment,
well, the,
connecting with the crowd.
The craziest thing is before I go on stage, a lot of the time when we're doing like, and I'm not even like, I'm not there yet with the tour just started, on my hard drive to my computer, I have a ton of wrestling promos.
Uh-huh.
And I just use those promos like, and I just
it pumps
me up and it gets me going for the stage.
Like, I've known Danko for years, and actually, like, the first time I was on his podcast, I went over his house, and like, I'm just, you know, looking around his shit like you do when you're in someone's house, and he's got like the Ric Flair DVD and like a bunch of wrestling books and stuff, and it's like, oh, you're into that too. And it's like, anyone you see that's like good on a rock promo is a wrestling fan, I find, you know, because that's how you those are like how you speak.
And I think what my point is, I still don't know what the hell Fitz was doing in there. Maybe I just. But my point
you just
you want said,
to talk about Age
I just
electric.
Wanted to say Fitz. When you said the wrestlers wrestling and all that stuff, I never like said, I'm going to be the wrestlers wrestler.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that. I just did what I did. You know, when I started in 1990, oh, you're too small to be a wrestler. Yeah, I don't really agree. I mean, guys were huge back then. But I thought, okay, maybe I'm not the biggest guy in the show, but I can have the biggest personality, the biggest charisma, be the biggest presence on the show. You know, and that, having that attitude, it always kind of helped me get to the next step. And that's why with Fozzy, like, I don't care if people don't want to like the band. I really don't. Because if you don't like it, or you're going to still be stuck on the wrestling guy thing, or this is not legit, then fucking move aside. Let the people who do like it get a better seat. It doesn't matter to me. I've never listened to people that said, you can't do this, or you shouldn't do this. The people that tell you that are the ones that have failed. You know, people tell you that you can't do something, the ones that have failed in their own hopes and dreams.
Yeah.
I've failed, but I've achieved what I needed to achieve, so I don't buy it.
Yeah.
And I don't buy it when other people say, oh, I'd like to do this, but I can't. Why? Why not? Have you tried? Have you put every ounce of your being into it? Because only then will you know. Like you said, you can't fail if you don't quit.
Yeah.
You know, so I've always kind of had that mindset. Maybe that made me the wrestler's wrestler or whatever, but to me it's always just been, what I want to see if I go to a wrestling match? Mm-hmm. What would I want to see if I went to a rock show? And that's why I always judge to this day of how I put on a performance or what I do in the ring or on stage or when we're writing a song. What would I want to hear?
So from a logistical standpoint, doing these two things, or three things, you're also, you know, an actor, TV personality.
There's probably 10 things at this point.
Yeah, but like from a real practical level, you worked Monday night, hopped on a plane, and flew here to work again. Is that like, is your body, like...
I've just always been kind of used to it, and I mean, I definitely sometimes kind of get totally worn out, but like I said, man, all I ever wanted to do was be in a rock band and be a wrestler, so I'd be crazy not to, like, embrace this and enjoy every moment of it. And once again, it's funny because I've been in Australia 6 times, 3 with the WWE and 3 with Fozzy. I wouldn't even get on a plane if it was wrestling unless I'm first class, just for example. Yeah. At that level, it's like, you know, Lars is coming here for Metallica. It's like, I'm sure it's complete first class. But with the band, I'm in, you know, 59C next to the screaming kid and the old lady that's got the dinner lady arms. That's like, you know, I don't care. I'll sit there. It doesn't matter, man. It's like I don't, like, need to be sitting in first class for this. I mean, obviously, if you've worked and earned it, then that's fine. But with our band, we're still earning it.
Do you find it like, you need to change your mentality from going from wrestling? No, just automatically switch.
You can't do both at the same time. The only reason why I went back to the WWE for just a short run is because I had about 3 months off from the Fozzy tour.
Yeah.
Except for this, but even we'll do WrestleMania and then I'll do the Monday Raw and the SmackDown after. Then I get straight on a plane on Wednesday, fly to Europe for our next Fozzy tour.
That's crazy.
And that's what happened when we did Uproar this year in the States. It's the, you guys know Uproar is like the festival tour.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
The first 2 dates of Uproar started, then I had to fly from Little Rock to LA to do my last 2 gigs with the WWE and then fly back to St. Louis to join the Uproar tour again. That was hard.
Yeah.
It's hard to be like rock, wrestling, music. You can't really go back.
How does your voice, like, I'm always interested in that, because you could tell. I blew my voice out yesterday singing with Duff, and
you mean you can feel it, right? Well, we used to do, like I said, we used to do wrestling shows and then Fozzy shows right after. That was crazy. Yeah. That was back in 2005, and it's like, seemed like a good idea at the time, but worst idea.
Your body
was terrible.
What if someone fucking punches you by mistake right in the fucking vocal cords?
But just yelling, too. I mean, you're in the ring.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, it is, as a singer, you have to be controlled. If you're going to scream, you can hit the highest scream as long as you're controlled.
Yeah.
But if you just want, like, hey, don't steal my car, you can blow your fucking voice out just from that. So I can't do both at the same time. And I won't be doing too much wrestling anymore. I might go back for a couple months because I still enjoy it. It's fun. But the days of me being there for a year or 2 years are gone.
So did you look at your siphon wrestling in a different light now? Because, like, Fozzy's become a bigger, much
Fozzy's
bigger
become my priority.
And it's, and, like, should you, like, see your role in wrestling different than you saw it, like, before?
It's weird because we talk about earlier experience. Like, you can't teach experience.
Yeah.
And a lot of those guys just don't have it. It's not their fault. They'll get it. But I can waltz in and waltz out and be, like, I think this last month I had was one of the best months I've had as far as match quality and what I was doing for whatever reason, just because I think differently after having all this experience of how to put things together. Mm-hmm. Once again, it sounds like I'm, you know, sucking my own cock. No, I'm not trying to. I'm just saying, like, it's just, I see, like,
anyone that knows your story, I think, if you have, you earn the right anyone that's heard about, you know, what you went through at WCW and then what you went through at the Fed,
yeah,
you know?
But just like, talking about, like, just seeing things. It's like, yeah. They used to say that Gretzky could see the puck before it got there. That's why he's so good. Like, I can see, like, if we're having a match and these guys have all these ideas, I'll just sit there and like, well, how come you're not saying anything? Well, just give me a second. And just like,
plan it out.
All those ideas they have aren't working, or maybe one of them works. Okay, and it's like number counters come in a row, and it's like, bing, 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 bing. Okay, this is what we're going to do. Trust me. And then we do it, and it works. And that's just because of years of thinking of ways to do things like that.
You know? And Daniel Bryan to me was like a dream match of sorts. And like, is there like young guys that you're like, you know, like, not me, that's the next Chris Jericho, but is there, like, young guys that you're like...
Well, I mean, for Daniel Bryan, like, he's a guy that I knew was good.
You just fucked up his entrance music, too, when he was in Ring of Honor.
Oh, I did?
He did.
Oh, he did?
Daniel Bryan.
Oh, he used your band? Okay, sorry.
No, I meant I fucked up my band, not just, like, he's crazy music.
The best is when one of your guys came over, I was talking to Lars at the barbecue, came over.
Yeah.
I can't remember what this guy was, but I'm so and so from Fucked Up, and
doesn't matter unless it's me.
Okay, you're right. The other guys, in
the other dudes,
one of the nameless, faceless, interchangeable guys. So, and Lars told his girlfriend after. She's like, "He's in Fucked Up," and I was like, "Yeah, they're probably not going to be stocking their albums in Walmart this year."
We won. I don't know if you've heard that Polaris Award they have in Canada.
Yeah.
We won the Polaris a couple years ago.
Oh shit!
Yeah, and then they Best Buy. I guess had like, oh, well, this won the Polaris. Let's order, like, we sold next to nothing of that record in Canada. We, all of a sudden, our sales went through the roof. We got our, like, weekly reports. It's like, holy shit. And they're like, yeah, Best Buy and Future Shop just bought a ton. And then we get, 2 months later, negative sales.
Returns.
And all returned. They didn't even rack them. They just returned them unopened.
It's just almost like, Fucked Up?
Are you kidding? This band won something?
They're really called Fucked Up? Yeah. But
anyway, Daniel
I think
Bryan,
with the Daniel Bryan thing was like, I mean, I worked him once when he first came into the WWE. Mm-hmm. It was a very short match, but I mean, I've been seeing his stuff and know how good he is. But you never know until you actually get in there with somebody.
Yeah.
It's like jamming with somebody. Like, fucking has a great guitar player. But sometimes maybe you'll jam and there's no chemistry or something. But yeah, we had that match and it was awesome. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad we had it because, like I said, I'm not gonna be like, this is my last year. I mean, I don't know. I might wrestle one more match, I might wrestle 100 more matches. I might wrestle 500 more matches. I don't know. I don't think of things like that. Just whatever comes up, if it feels right, I'll do it. But I might never get a chance to work with him again. So it was cool to have that moment and have that time and to you know, have a great match.
Yeah, absolutely. It was one of the highlights of the TV year so far.
Oh, cool. That's good. Fans. Thank you.
So, I punished you for hours.
No, man.
I gotta sing with Duff.
I understand.
Are you guys doing You're Crazy?
You're Crazy, yeah. Nice. We're doing that. We did it yesterday. I think we gotta do it again. So.
Yeah, your voice all right?
I got 2 days off.
Exactly. You need to hit those.
That's what
notes.
You look at. You got 3 minutes. You got 3 verses,
yeah, exactly.
Dude.
Exactly.
You can do it.
And then I'm gonna go see you tomorrow night. Speak with Scott
Ian.
Good
word. Yeah, I was telling you earlier. It's like I did one in London. We have the same booking agent, Anthrax and Fozzy, so Dan DeVito is like, well, let's book a couple in Australia. We've got a couple nights off. Fine. No plan, no list of what I'm going to talk about. I have a beginning. I don't even have an end. Maybe I should think of something tomorrow. But I went up there and just talked for 2.5 hours last time.
I can't
like
wait.
That.
I can't
so,
wait.
So if you guys got some questions, think of them, and we'll figure it out.
I'm actually going to... I have to play a sideshow tomorrow, so I'm
okay.
Gonna miss it.
Well, then tell your question to Danko.
Yeah, Danko, you ask it and then record it. Who'll make it for me?
I'll do it.
Oh.
10 minutes till You're Crazy. Okay, well, that's
I like
Matias.
How he's silent. He's like, he's being
and
nice.
That's it. I guess that's our cue to end the
easy,
podcast.
Man.
That was
amazing.
Awesome.
Thank
you
time,
so
guys.
Much,
glad
man.
Glad we were able to do it. Please, thanks for your interest in being.
Oh, no, absolutely. And as I say, it's like, you know, I was telling you this earlier, but like, you know, as someone who's been in a band that's. Fat guy in a band that's got a swear
like
for a
really,
name.
Really fat.
But like just rehab, huge.
All right, I'll get in on this. Yeah, fat guy, Damon.
No, but like, you know, like seeing someone and like reading in the books about like what you dealt with and just seeing like someone dealing with that shit and kind of still rising above it and then seeing you do that in music, it's a pretty fucking inspiring thing.
Thanks, man. Like I said, I just followed my dreams and didn't listen to anybody that said I couldn't do it and hung out with people like you guys that understand, and that's what it's all about, man.
So eat that, all naysayers.
So good! Well, that was it.
Amazing. Amazing.
It was It was so I could much tell fun. You were a little starstruck.
I was super starstruck. I was okay with Jericho by that point. I felt, but the first time I met him at that Metallica, first night we got here, that Metallica threw a barbecue. Yeah, that's how we're living. And Chris Jericho was there, and I went up to him, and I was like shaking like a leaf. And it's funny, any of these people I met from music, not an issue. Not an issue at all, but people from wrestling, starstruck me. Is that it? Starstruck me? Yeah, but I don't
starstruck. Starstruck, but they starstriking. Starstriking me.
Whew, we blew. Joan is an English major, and we just blew his mind with our
that
English question.
Causing me to be starstruck.
Yeah, exactly. but yeah, no, I definitely, yeah, I was a little shook. I was a little shook, to say the least. So much so that I forgot to ask the one question that I've always wanted to ask him, which is Bob Mould. What about Bob Mould? Because, you know, obviously, being from music, both of us being from music, Bob Mould walks on water. But in the wrestling world, he was part of a pretty villainized administration. So I've always wondered what, you know, someone who's not necessarily a punk rocker's take on Bob Mould and, you know, writing there. And
we should say Bob Mould was
WCW writer.
Writer.
Yeah, exactly.
He was a writer.
And
well, I guess we should say Husker Du.
Husker, he's also in Husker Du and Sugar and one of the best music songwriters, you know, in alternative music ever. But also a wrestling writer, and a great wrestling writer too, I think. I think, you know, the administration was more to blame. But I'm just intrigued here about Chris Jericho's memories of working with Bob
Are
Mould.
You trying to procure a part two from Jericho?
I'm hoping.
Outro.
I'm hoping Jericho hears this and goes, "Oh, there's so many questions left to answer by me."